Hi, I'm Will from Venture to Rome. Thank you for joining me and Jason Fletcher from All Things Overlanding today. We're going to be talking about rigs. Like, what is the best overlanding rig? I have a Jeep. Fletch has an Xterra. And we have driven and ridden in lots of other rigs and seen lots of other rigs. So we're going to be talking about that. Before we get started, I just want to say thanks, Fletch. Thanks for coming on and spending time with me, making content and talking about nerdy overlanding stuff.
Yeah, it's super fun. Thanks for having me.
Cool. All right, let's jump into it. So Fletch, what do you think, what's an important attribute to an overlanding rig, or like, what's your favorite model that's out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm kind of, the way that I'm breaking up sort of my thoughts on this topic are kind of by like a feature, right? Like what am I looking for? What makes a good overlanding vehicle? And then I'll give you some examples of like what I think falls into that category, if you will. So, I've kind of thought on both sides of the aisle, whether it's like buying a brand new, like a Tacoma or a 4Runner for 40, 50,000 bucks, dropping 10 or 15, 20 grand on modifications for it, whether that's the best approach to take, or whether like buying an older, higher mileage truck and just not caring as much about it and being able to beat on it is a better option. In my opinion, what makes a better rig for my use anyways, I like to hit the harder trails. I like to, you know, do some more challenging stuff whenever I possibly can. So I am in the like inexpensive older camp. And you know, a great example of that, and I will kind of give you an example slash how I came to own my rig that I've got, was, you know, when I started doing this like 4-ish years ago, I wanted a 4Runner. That's what I wanted. I was like, you know what? My budget is, let's call it 10 to 15 grand. Like, I want to get something that's relatively like within the last 10 or 15 years, right? Like something that's not super old and doesn't have 250, 300,000 miles on it, but also not something that has like 20,000 miles and is 2 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to kind of buy this as a beater that I could pay off really quick and use as a daily for a few years, and then buy another car that I would use as my daily after that and turn that into sort of a more dedicated overlanding rig. But I started looking and like, you know, again, for me, even the used Toyotas and stuff, the market on them is so crazy that you were talking twice as many miles as my Nissan Xterra, you know, 2 to 5 years older than my Nissan Xterra. Mine's an 05. I bought it 4 years ago with 94,000 miles on it for $7,000. Like, I mean, it was bone stock, but it looked brand new. And like, but I've had that thing 4.5 years now. I've put 45,000 miles on it. Like, I think I made the right decision. I don't care if I tap a tree with it, right? I don't care if I hear my armor scraping underneath. Like, for me anyways, it's so much more fun to just not really care and just be able to get it out there and have fun in the truck and worry more about the experience than like taking care of my vehicle.
Well, we bought our Jeep used 2013. I can't remember when we bought it. It's maybe 5 years old. We bought it maybe 5 years ago. It had 30,000 miles on it. My stepbrother manages a car lot. And I said, oh, that's the Jeep, man. That's the Jeep, bro. I want it. Give me a deal. And he was like, nope. He was like, sorry, everybody wants to buy one of those things. He goes, but here's the thing. Nobody wants to pay for them. So just if you can wait for 6 weeks, I guarantee we're going to drop the price. Nice. So I was like, all right. And so I waited. He texts me 6 weeks later. Nobody's bought it. They dropped it by $3,000 or $4,000. And I scooped it up. We didn't buy it as an overland rig, though. Bought it. I was like, I don't want to buy a Rubicon. Why would I buy a Rubicon? It's got all that costs extra money. All the Jeeps do the same. Whatever. I just want to take the top off. So, and I want the fenders to match, you know, like, and I want to have, you know, like, I want the interior to look nice. So, here's the thing. The first time I took it off road, I was so nervous about scratching it. I recorded that. I don't want to share it because I'm so embarrassed to show it now, but like, I was recording that on my phone at the time and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to scratch my Jeep. What am I doing? You know, and you know, since then, like, you know, I treat my Jeep probably similarly to how you treat your Xterra now. It's like those scratches are there. Like, there's, what's one more gonna matter at this point? You know, it's like, let's just hit the trail. So yeah, I totally agree with that approach in general. I think overspending on an overlanding rig, you can take the money you saved, right, and invest it into some really important gear, and you know, come out probably with a more capable rig than if you were just to buy something brand new.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I definitely don't want to discourage people from that. But I watch those guys and I'm just like, I backed into one of my trash cans the other day, leaving my driveway, and I saw it and I just kind of nipped it and I tweaked it a little bit out of the way. And then I backed out of the driveway and I kid you not, I was like, I just need to push it back a little bit. I put it in drive and I just pushed it with my bumper back into the way. Anyway, what's yours? What's your first one?
Okay, my first one. Oh, by the way, on the I'm seriously taking a hard look at the G392 right now. So, for all that, I'm about to overspend. Yeah. You know, when you're in love with something, you just have to call it what it is. Okay, so my thing for overlanding rigs, the thing that I think is super important, maybe more than anything else, is durability. Like just, I mean, we drive the dust out of our Jeep. We drive that thing so hard, so fast. We take, and it's heavy, you know, we put all this stuff into it. And so, it's not that it doesn't take maintenance. Yeah. I've got to go, you know, I tighten up, make sure everything's torqued right. And, you know, it does take maintenance, but the durability of having a solid front axle, and just the, you know, having something that has kind of always been made off-road, not to say that Jeeps don't break down, but my opinion on Jeeps is a lot of times they break down because they're being abused. They have electrical problems because we're going through water crossings all the time. I mean, you know, there definitely are issues that prop up, come up with Jeeps, but the durability factor in any rig. And this is where I see a lot of the debates start happening on like Facebook groups, and, you know, there's the Jeep people, there's the Toyota people, there's, you know, the Subaru people, there's certainly the very smaller but more passionate Nissan contingent.
Like three of us, yeah.
but like that argument about like, well, which one's better off-road, which one's a better overlanding rig? And, you know, for me, I sacrifice some comfort because we don't have independent front suspension for the durability of that solid axle. And that just gives me a lot of comfort when we're out, you know, 70 miles from any services, to know that the chances are that front axle is going to hold up and not break, or if something does happen, I'll be able to limp home. And so durability for me. And I think, you know, I think I have to default to Jeeps because I love them. I also love Toyotas. I don't know enough about like the inner workings of Nissans to know like how durable they are. But those, yeah, you know, those are the three that I would put into that category.
Yeah. Well, and you know, from my experience with Nissan, just to kind of piggyback off of that, like I'm a Nissan fanboy. I love Nissan stuff, but there's a couple reasons. And like, if I had to put them in order, like reliability, the big three Japanese companies, right? Toyota, Honda, Nissan, like that's just how it is, right? Like the Nissans are the least reliable of the big three from Japan. However, in my experience, I've owned Dodges, I've owned Chevys, I've owned Fords, I've had all the domestic too. And I've had nothing but problems with every single one of them. The only one that I didn't, and I will say, is I had a 2000 Jeep Cherokee with a 4 liter, and that thing was bulletproof. It was great. I had some overheating. I had to do some stuff with an electric fan. But I mean, that was just like a common thing. Everybody knows about it. It wasn't a huge expensive repair. I didn't blow a trans or an engine or anything like that. It wasn't a big deal. But like, I've just, my history of that has been that it's been really bad. So like, even though Nissan is at the low end of the totem pole compared to like a Toyota or even a Honda, Honda doesn't have any off-roading options really. A Ridgeline doesn't count. Pilots don't count. They don't really have anything. And they're great vehicles. My wife has a Pilot. Mm-hmm. Would never overland it. It's gonna explode. But so Toyotas are great, but like, but for the money, right? Like it's still like anything under 07 with 150 to 250,000 miles, 12 to 15 grand. Like that's twice what I paid for my 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I only have 140,000 on my Xterra, and it starts up every single time. I've never been stranded, and I've done nothing. I did a radiator when I first got it, but like, I've never touched the transmission, never touched the engine, oil changes, topping off fluids. That's all I've done. So I think
I'll say this though. People can get a false sense of security if they think their rig's too reliable, sure, are too durable. This past weekend, we were up in the mountains and we came across the 4Runner that had a flat tire. And so we have a rule. If we ever see a hiker or a biker, we always roll down the window, ask if they need any water and take their trash. And in fact, I saw somebody else do that on YouTube. I think it was Lightbright. They're doing it too. It's such a nice thing to do if you're out there in your rig. So anyway, and always, if there's somebody on the side of the road, always stop and ask. So we did. And it was really clear that this guy didn't know. He just didn't know. He just didn't know how to change a tire. He'd never done it before. And his tire was shredded. I was ready to get out a tire patch kit, but he had shredded his sidewall. I don't know exactly what happened, but I can tell you, when you're driving down a dirt road and you've got a really nice 4Runner and you think it's super durable, but you haven't looked at your tires lately, or you haven't taken into stock what kind of tires you have and how you're driving them, then things break. You know, a lot of it is how you use it.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so I think durability is super important for an overlanding rig. What is your second major attribute?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say that, because mine's really similar. So mine is a combo of capability and reliability, right? So like, to your point, yes, I will give you hands down, like the Jeeps are pretty tough, pretty unbeatable. You know, like a lot of the like old school Toyotas and Lexuses with solid axles are super crazy, and lockers and stuff. Like they're so capable and so reliable that's always something I look at. You know, there's always this huge debate between IFS, independent front suspension, or solid axles and stuff. Yes, obviously there are definitely limits to my independent front suspension. But like, when I look back the last 4 years, yes, I've been to West Virginia and we hit some pretty crazy trails there. And by crazy, I mean crazy for me. Like, there were other guys that had no problems. Like a Jeep probably would have had no problems, but I was a little sketched out by some stuff. Upper Peninsula of Michigan hit some trails where I was scraping some armor. And I mean, really realistically, out of that 45,000 miles, maybe like 20 miles of it have been really, really hard trails. You know, like if I lived in Missouri or lived in Moab or something where I really needed that stuff, it may be different. But in my opinion, the solid rear axle of the Xterra and the independent front suspension is plenty capable for pretty much anything I can hit in the Midwest. Independent front suspension, but solid axle rear, like a Lexus GX 460 or 470.
Yeah.
The Nissan Xterra, the Frontier, those are that I lean towards, I think. Because you get that combination of reliability from the Lexus or the Nissan, and also plenty of capability to do most of what you need to do.
I mean, I've seen them all get stuck. You know, stuck is stuck. Our Jeep now has front back lockers and all kinds of stuff that we've done to it, and we've used all of our recovery gear. You know, but not very often. Most of the time, I'm bombing down a dirt road to get to some amazing campsite. Because I'm not out to wheel first. I'm out to go explore and find destinations. And a lot of times those destinations don't have treacherous roads. Sometimes they do. And I've always been grateful for what we have when we go through them. But I can't really remember a time when I've been like crawling up something with both lockers engaged, thinking, oh, thank God I have both lockers. I have been in situations where I've thought, oh, thank God I have both lockers, but I never used them. You know, or maybe I just use the rear locker.
That's like a common misconception, I feel like, too. Like, I built my Xterra in my head before I even bought it. I had 33s in my cart. I had, you know, lift. I had armor. I've used my armor. Maybe I've used it more at like off-road parks, just messing around. Like, for those of you listening out there that maybe haven't bought a rig yet or think about capability. Like, I'm not saying buy a Prius and then go to Moab, right? But like, you don't necessarily need it. It depends on where you live. It depends on a lot of things. If you have something that's reliable and semi-capable, like an IFS, solid rear axle, you know, Nissan Xterra, like, you don't have to spend tons of money to mod it. But anyways, I digress. Yes. What's your next thing?
Mine is comfort and the ability to have a load. I think it's really important. And here's why. Like, I drive maybe the most, not the most, but it's not as known as being a comfortable thing to drive. It's you know, pretty terrible to drive on the highway with the rooftop tent and it loaded down and the kids and the awning and everything. You know, it's got 488 gears on it. So it, you know, doesn't, it likes to go like 50, 55. It's like really comfortable. And anything over that, it's like, I'm not sure I want to do this right now. But there are rigs out there that are just more comfortable. And there are times that I'm envious of that. More room in the cab. So Jeeps are made to be narrow on purpose because you can go down more narrow trails. And so you don't have the cab room that you have in a Toyota, certainly like some of the full size rigs that I run with a lot, like a Tundra or Power Wagons, they just feel luxurious in terms of the space that you have. And I think you're on the road for hours and hours and hours every day. And I think knowing what you want in terms of your comfort is really important. And if you're going for comfort, Jeep's probably not the first place you should look. You should probably look at something with an independent front suspension or that's just bigger, and just know that there are some trails that you're either going to get scratched or you just won't go down. And then the ability to carry a load. Again, Jeep's payload sucks. So I have, an expensive suspension, and I have airbags in the back to keep it from sagging when I'm fully loaded. And we go out with this one particular Tundra all the time. And that Tundra, I just put all my stuff in the back. I'm like, hey, you bring the Tundra, like you're carrying the firewood. You know, it has such load capacity. I'm so envious of that sometimes. And my trade-off is different. My trade-off is like the build of a Jeep for the trail versus some of that storage and some of that comfort. So I think that's really important in considering a rig. What about you?
My next one kind of ties in with what you were saying almost exactly, right? Like as I've built up my gear and as I've kind of figured out like what I like to have from like a rooftop tent to a fridge to drawer systems to, you know, all the gear that I need to like have a fun trip. And then also with that too, though, like, so when you're looking at that, that's one thing that I would recommend looking at is like, you know, what kind of space do you need? How much gear are you really going to need in this vehicle? But then also aftermarket support, which is a little tough on an Xterra. Although I will say it's better than like a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But like compared to a Jeep, no way. You've got options. You've got different, you know, vendors you can buy it from. I've got maybe one or two real vendors for Nissan. And so you just have to pay $2,500 for a full suspension setup.
One of our good friends has a Disco LR3 Land Rover.
Oh yeah, I bet.
And he has to do all the work himself because it's so expensive to have them worked on. And like the way that they're engineered, they're beautiful cars and they're super capable, but they also have some issues. And to get in there he had to remove the manifold to change a light bulb or something like that. I mean, it was just the way they put them together, you know, but he does it. He likes doing it. But but that is, I think, like super important. I love those LR3s. I think they're really beautiful, comfortable, really comfortable. And they've got big engines in them. But, you know, when they break, which they do, he drives around with an OBD3 reader with him all the time. He just has it plugged in constantly because it's throwing codes. The ability to work on them, regardless of if you can find parts, but the ability to work on them, I think is, and Toyota's got that. I don't really know about Nissan. Jeep definitely has that down where there's like, you can find the information and they actually manufacture them so that you can get under there and work on them.
I've always done all my own stuff on the Xterra and it's really easy to work on, which is nice. Yeah. I'm super biased towards Japanese vehicles, but there's so little to this truck that it's not even like, I just look back at like vehicles. Like I had a Dodge Dakota back in the day when I was a younger person, like 25, 30,000 miles on the thing. It was like 3 years old and the transmission started sticking and wouldn't shift from third to fourth gear.
Oh.
And I'm like, I'm not doing that on the side of the road, or, you know, there's nothing I can do about that. And then this thing has 140,000 miles and I haven't even checked the transmission fluid. Like it just runs. It has no problems. So
yeah. Well, you know, there's one rig that we really haven't talked about. I hesitate to use the word rig. It's more of a car. And that's the Subarus, the Subis. Yep. Subis are out there, you know, and like us Jeep folk like to poke fun at Subaru folk. In my case, at least, it's super good natured because, I think whatever whatever rig you're in is the rig that you should be using to overland. It's all about getting out there and being mindful of the rig that you're in. Don't, you know, don't get yourself in trouble, but I get a lot of talk and chatter from certain Subaru owners that I know about how capable they are and how they can go anywhere a Jeep can go. And you know, I think there's some truth to that in that they're like, they can go lots of places. There was a channel, it's called Soft Roading the West, a YouTube channel. Yeah. He just switched over to a truck, but he was driving a Subaru for a long time because it's the car that he had. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, I'm not rock crawling. I'm out driving on dirt roads. And I think there's a space for that. I actually give a lot of respect to the people who are out there driving Subarus that are taking them off road, because it's a little bit harder to drive those. You've got smaller tires. You've got to pick your line carefully. You've got less ground clearance. And there's, in my opinion, there's a greater chance that you will break something because they are not designed to do heavy lifting off road.
Yeah.
What do you think about Subarus?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree totally. That's, you know, when I went to Georgia a few months ago to pick up my rooftop tent, the guy that went with me had like a late 90s Legacy. Yeah. Like 200 and some thousand miles on the thing. Yeah. Like lifted bigger tires, and it was rad. It was really cool, you know. I mean, he had some limitations. He, you know, he replaces axles somewhat frequently, I think. He you know, he couldn't go very fast. He was like, I can't go over 70 or I get a death wobble. And like, but I mean, he's modified this thing. He's built a lot of this stuff himself, you know, to save money and keep it reasonable. And he's a pretty handy guy, so that made sense. But who knows, you know, I like the Subarus. I think they're nice. I'm not going to say anything crappy about them, because to your point, I don't think that they can do like some of the rock crawling stuff, but my Xterra can't do some of that either, right? Like I have a little bit more ground clearance. I might have a little bit more capability, but I think they're great options for 80 to 90% of the stuff that most of us do anyway. So
there's yeah, I think I will not buy a Subaru to overland. Right. I'm going to put that on the record now. And it's not because I think they're bad cars, but it's because I want to do different things with my rig that I don't think Subaru should be doing. So I guess the way I think about it is you just have to know the limits of your rig. I do want to have an opinion on this. I don't think all rigs are created equal. I think they should be driven to their, to their limits, but you got to know what those limits are. Is there a rig that you're like, okay, that is my, if I could buy a new rig today and money was no option and time was no option, this is what I would get?
Honestly, like if I just had like 30, 40 grand and I was just like, you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to buy something that I really, really want. I would say probably like the newer body style GX460s, like the ones with the big aggressive grill.
Yeah.
Just because I think they look cool, period. That's it. The 460s are all great trucks. I think the 2010 through 2012 pre-facelift ones are not as pretty. They're not bad. And I've seen some built ones and they're great. So those are still definitely being considered. And the 470s are nice, but they're just so old. You know, I think they're super capable. I think they're great trucks, but my goal would be to step up to something that's newer than my 05, right? Significantly newer, like 2012 through 15, somewhere in that ballpark, with like 40 to 100,000 miles, somewhere in that ballpark. But man, those facelifted GX460s, like a 2015-16 GX460 for like, they're still like 30, 35 grand. Like, if I could buy one of those and dump another 20 grand into it, that thing would be a monster. What about you?
Well, I think I said earlier, 392, the Jeep 392.
Oh, yeah.
Totally captured my imagination at the moment. And I just think that my wife, Kate, drives a really fast Audi, and this thing goes 0 to 60 faster than her Audi, because it's just, they just put this monster right engine in it, which I think is so cool. And I just think about all the applications, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about loading it down other than this, you could suspension drivetrain and those kinds of things, but like it's got enough power to do whatever you want, which is really, really cool. However, if I were just dreaming out loud, I would love to get one of those old Land Rover Defenders just like rework it from top to bottom, just like all just go through it and put all the creature comforts in it and, you know, not even restore it, just like start over, but like use that platform. It's just so classic. I just love those things. There is a decent chance that I might buy an old used one that's in bad shape and try to just fix it up just because I think it's so cool.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even like using GMRS. I wish I could still use CBs. I wish they worked. I love analog, you know. I love that those things are all analog and they're just so classic. So yeah, for me, I would definitely do that. If I'm leaving Jeep, I would probably want to leave Jeep to go to something like that just because they're so rad. All right. Well, any parting thoughts on rigs? Any last piece of advice you want to give somebody?
I would say if I had to give someone advice, like, again, I bought mine because I'm like, I'm a Nissan person. I need something super capable and I have a budget, right? Like, that's why I bought my Xterra. What I would say is, like, before you even get to that point, think about realistically, how many trips a year are you going to take? Where are you going to take them to? What kind of terrain are you going to tackle? Are you in the Ozarks where you have super muddy, deep pits and water crossings and trees everywhere? Are you in the Midwest like me where it's mostly gravel roads and maybe some rocks occasionally? Like, think about your actual trips. And then on top of that, think about the gear you want to carry, whether your family goes with you or you go solo. Really think before you buy a rig, think about what you actually need the rig to do, and not like, I saw a guy on YouTube with a built up power wagon, so I need 10 inches of lift and 38s, you know, like, that's just, don't think about what you need it to do. That's my advice.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for hanging out and having another one of these discussions. These are really fun. Just kind of noodle on some of these topics. So really appreciate it. If you're watching this right now and you haven't been over to All Things Ogre Landing, go to their YouTube, go to Fletch's YouTube channel. The man is a machine. He puts out just incredible content, a lot of information, gear reviews. He does trip videos. He has a podcast. I cannot keep up in terms of being a YouTube content creator, but I can keep up in listening and watching. It's one of yours is one of my most favorite content streams. So if you're watching this, go check out Fletch. If you're watching this and you're one of like the 70% of folks who watch Venture to Roam but haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. It really helps the channel. And I would love to have you as a subscriber. And we all are all about building a community. So we want to connect with you. And so please consider subscribing. If you like this video, hit the like and open up the comments. Let's have a conversation in the comments about what rig you think is best, or what are the things that you think are the most important when it comes to buying a rig or modifying the rig that you have. We'd love to engage in that. Okay, so that's it for us. Thanks a lot for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. You can cut that thank you out if you want to.
I'm just cutting you out. Every
Yeah. You're just like, so what do you think, Fletch?